obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the Month Club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Hi, everybody. My name's Cindy Cicchini, and I'm an alcoholic. Oh, boy. For those of you that don't know me, I am a crier, so I have a new hanky here. We're ready to go. I cried yesterday when that horse won the Triple Crown, okay? It's just who I am. And you know, Alcoholics Anonymous takes my breath away. You can't hear me? Okay, can you hear me now? What are we gonna do? Can you hear me now? Okay, all right, I'll just kind of stand over here. Does it seem like I'm yelling? Okay. My brother used to call me Siren Mouth Cindy, so I have an issue with being too loud. Sometimes they just call me Siren Mouth for short. Anyways, all right. So first off, I want to thank Shirali for asking me to be the speaker today. And I want to thank the entire committee for all the work you do. I've watched it during the weekend, and you do so much work. And Mike and I have enjoyed ourselves. I'm going to get okay in a minute here. Just stay with me, it'll be okay. But we've really enjoyed ourselves and we love being here. It's been a great time. And, you know, Mike went out to golf yesterday and he left the hotel to golf. And I said to him, could you stop at the pharmacy and buy me some clinical strength antiperspirant? And I don't know if it's working, I hope so. But, this was not on my bucket list. I don't even have a bucket list. And now I'm thinking I should do a bucket list. But it takes my breath away how you could take a girl like me and turn her into a girl like me, someone that shows up, someone that stays, someone that, you know, just goes to work, those simple things. And I know the Sunday morning speaker is supposed to be spiritual. And, my favorite thing about that hotel room we're staying in is that mirror, that magnifying mirror. That's how spiritual I am. I must have said to Mike 4 times this weekend, I love this mirror, and it comes out and it goes in and... I said, maybe we could get one at home that's like I could Velcro it to the wall or something. And so, anyway, all right. Now that I got that out of the way. Whew. So, my job here this morning, I'm here to represent the women too, right? I mean, I'm the first woman speaker. We've had all these great guy speakers. So my job is to tell you in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And I only have one story, so here it goes. I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I grew up in one of those houses that look really good from the outside. We had a white picket fence. I want to tell you that picket fence had no chip marks. So it was like white all the time, year round. And I grew up in the 50s and 60s, long before weed whackers. I have a mom and a dad and an older brother, and our house was meticulous. And that picket fence, there was no weed whacker to cut the grass around the fence. So my dad, what he did is he had two rings on that fence, right? And then he pounded these poles into these stakes into the ground. And what he would do on Saturday is he'd pick that fence up off the stakes, put it over the side, cut the grass, and then put it back down. And there were no little blades sticking up around that fence. It was perfect. In our windows, all the white around the windows, there was no chip paint. And my dad would wash the cars, and my mom is one of those really good moms. We would always have, we even had bread and butter on the table every day, and we'd have like a vegetable and a starch and a protein, and we'd all sit at the kitchen table, and we'd have dinner. My mom would make a really nice dinner, and then my dad would get all cleaned up on Saturday night and go out with another woman. And that caused a little tension in the house. And not all the time. And, you know, my mother might say something, and he might knock the phone off the wall. This is what happened. See, this is back in the days. Some of you will not even believe this. We had one phone, and it hung on the kitchen wall. And if there was no call waiting, or you couldn't see who called, but if my dad didn't answer the phone, there might be a hang up. So my mom might say something, and my dad would knock that phone off the wall, or there'd be a fight, and he'd slam the door, and the door would come off the hinges. But I want to tell you, on Sunday morning, like now, we'd all get in that car, we'd go to that church, the four of us, would sit in that pew with my grandpa and my grandmother next to me, my Uncle Art, my Aunt Blanche behind me, all the people, like nothing happened. My dad was a deacon in that church, and I'm not saying my dad was a bad guy. I'm just telling you about our house was one of those houses that looked really good from the outside. And we didn't talk about it. It's just the way it was. And my dad is this guy that's bigger than life. He was a big guy, and I like to tell this little story so you get an idea how he was. My dad could do anything. We had stuff. We had like a boat, and my dad taught me to water ski, and had that stuff. But one day we were sitting at that kitchen table, and we used to have these things called like lights that kind of hung down. Like the wall was up here, but the light would hang to here. And there was a mouse, and the mouse was hanging its head over the light, like looking down at us. And we're like, hey, there's a mouse. And my dad said, give me a rubber band. True story. How could you make this shit up, right? Sorry. But my father got a rubber band, hit that mouse square in the head. The mouse went like, whoa, and fell on the floor, boom. And my dad grabbed it by the tail, took it outside, beat it against the side of the house, came in, washed his hands, and we finished dinner. Like nothing happened. So, anyways, there wasn't a problem my dad couldn't solve. Another thing about growing up, I was born without my left hand. And a lot of times you'll see me, I have one hand. A lot of times you'll see me, I have two hands. This is actually a new hand, this prosthesis. I know it looks good. It should for $24,000. I usually wear it to work every day, and a lot of times you'll see me at meetings with it on. This is actually new. I think this is like the third hour I ever wore, because it's a new design. It's taken some getting used to, but anyways, I thought I'd break it out today, you know, so. So, growing up with one hand, what I want to tell you is I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and people talked about feeling different. And I had that feeling of feeling different pushed down so far, I didn't want to be different, that I sat there and I consciously thought, I don't feel different. Now, meanwhile, I have one hand. You know? When I was in first or second grade, I wanted to be a brownie. Kids want to be brownies. And I remember my parents coming into the living room. I was sitting there watching television or whatever, and they came in and they said, the brownies just called. You can't be a brownie because you have one hand. I know. And, you know, this is probably, I don't know, early 60s, and there was no crying. I didn't cry. I just, I said to my dad about 7 years ago when I started thinking about this stuff, I said, hey, Dad, what did you guys say to me? And my dad, he had this kind of Nick Nolte voice. He said, I told you, just forget about them. Well, how do you forget about the brownies when all your friends are dressed up as brownies on Tuesdays? But I did. And probably right then I started that, screw you, who needs you anyways? And that's one of those character defects, screw you, who needs you anyways? And I'm just like the little soldier that just goes on. And when I turned 20 years sober, my friends were going to buy me a brownie outfit. and thought I could wear it around the house on Tuesdays. Someday. You know, and there were other things. I mean, I was a rainbow girl, and I don't know if anybody even knows what that is anymore, but I, you know, they hey, what about the secret word? And, I remember when my Aunt Doris called and said, well, they're checking into it because they walk the new candidate through the colors with their right hand. I mean, really? And I just thought, well, you know, or whatever hand, I don't know, whatever. It was like they had to check to see if I could be a rainbow girl because I didn't have a left hand. And, I mean, people say goofy things to you when you have one hand. But I know a couple things. One thing is I'm not alcoholic because I have one hand. And the other thing is I didn't take a drink and felt like I had two hands. That's not my story. My story is that I've taken a drink and lost my hand and thought, woke up from a being passed out and thought, where the hell is that hand? That was a bad morning. I think I was drinking sake the night before. I was getting ready for work. It was in my girlfriend's trunk. I'm like, holy crap. And anyway, the other thing what happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous is I learned to love you with all your stuff. You know, by doing those commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned about you and I learned to listen. And I know that God loves you. And I heard that from my sponsor. And God wants good things for us. And I don't know why I have one hand, but I know he wants me to have a good life. And I have one hand. And, you know, I'm Vic Dobie's daughter, so it's not like I was allowed to sit around and feel sorry for myself. My dad taught me to do backflips off of high dives, and I know how to water ski and snow ski, and, you know, I'm that person. Sometimes I probably did too much. I could have backed off a little bit. Asking for help is not a strong suit of mine, but when I do ask for help, I want it now, okay? So... I said to my husband this morning, something like, can you button this for me? And the poor guy's in the middle of doing something. It's like, now. You know? But, yeah, so anyways, yeah, I have one hand. And so I grew up in this house. Like I said, I have an older brother. He's 6 years older than me. And I grew up in this house, and I go to high school in the 70s. I graduated from high school in 72, and you know, it's a time of peace, love, rock and roll. And I don't remember my first drink. I'm going to high school, and, you know, I started drinking that Boone's Farm and that Strawberry Hill and Ripple on Fridays. And sometimes I'd go visit. I remember I had this friend in college and would drink Southern Comfort. And I love the effect caused by alcohol. I just love the effect caused by alcohol. And I'm not an alcoholic. I've been sober for 28 and a half years. I'm not an alcoholic that wouldn't love the effect caused by alcohol right now. You know, luckily for me, I found that effect here in Alcoholics Anonymous, that effect of ease and comfort. I'm so grateful for that. And you know, as I sit in this room, I went to the Wednesday night a South Coast speakers meeting at the Women's Club for many years, and I look around this room and I see people that came to share at that meeting, and I'd sit there and I had that ease and comfort. I knew I was okay in my own skin, and I thank you for that. See? I can't help it. But okay, so I'm in this, you know, I'm in high school, and my parents are strict people. They, you know, I never wanted to get smacked around. Back then, you know, you just got smacked right across the face. If you were in trouble, it was not good. And They didn't beat me, but it wasn't fun, and you get yelled at and all that. So I thought I was kind of cool, but when I went away to college, I went to a state university on Lake Erie in Edinburgh, Pennsylvania. The party was on. I am a party girl. I love drinking. And you know, I used to smoke that weed, and I like that mescaline. I don't know if they even have that today, but I would take this mescaline and paper, some kind of dot, I don't know, something, and mushrooms, and I just like to lay in the grass and look at the leaves, and that was spiritual. And I remember that mescaline was like $2 or $4, and I don't know. But what I do know is my father worked for U.S. Steel in the steel mill for a long time, and you know, my dad wouldn't take a vacation. He would take the payout, so he put us through college. My dad, I went to school. I had a Camaro. I had nice clothes. We used to have these 8-tracks. You have no idea what that is, but we had these 8-tracks. I had a Penny's card. I would go to Penny's, sold 8-tracks. I remember I'd buy those Penny's, those 8-tracks. And I would go home sometimes on the weekend. I'm not the kid that comes home on Friday and sits down with their parents and tells them about my classes or asks my dad what he does at work or asks my mom how it's going. I don't do that. I come home. I go out with my girlfriends till 2, 3 in the morning, wake up Saturday at 10, 11, 12, get my mother to take me shopping, probably complain the whole time. Then I'd go out with my girlfriends again, get up, go to church on Sunday. My mom would have food packed for me, clothes cleaned. I'd leave. That's me. I don't even care. I don't think about you. I don't say thank you. Thanks. Thanks for all this. I'm not grateful at all. That's just who I am. And luckily, through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been able to make those amends and tell them how much I appreciate what they've done for me. But that's who I am, untreated, selfish and self-centered to the core, period. And you know those character defects of mine, that one about screw you, who needs you anyways, and selfish and self-centered to the core? It's not like that just goes away. That's who I am. Luckily, through the tools that you've given me, having strong sponsorship and you know, and a God in my life, I've been able to think through things before I act most of the time. But yeah, I graduated from that college. I have a degree in psychology. And seriously, Clancy was talking about Carl Jung yesterday. Just, I don't know, a couple years ago, I was reading something, and it was about Carl Jung, and I said, Jung, J-U-N-G. Is that how you spell that guy's name? I have a degree in psychology. I don't even know who he is. Like Freud. Really, who is he? I don't know. Sigmund Freud, big deal. And I'm not knocking psychology for anybody who's into that field. I'm just saying for me, I got nothing out of college, really. I'm just a big, you know, I got out of school and I went back home to live. I'm from Pittsburgh. The steel mills were still working. Seriously, a guy down the street who was a head of HR or something called our house because this is all I was doing. I had this big old English sheepdog. I just walked the dog during the day, party all night. And one day he called and he said, you know, people liked our family and it's a close neighborhood. He said, send Cindy down to the mill and tell her to fill out an application. There's jobs available. So I went down there. I got this job in the office. And I worked shifts, which means I would work 1 week 7 to 3 p.m., 1 week 3 p.m. to 11 p.m., 1 week 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. I was, what, 22 years old? The mill, seriously, there's like 12,000 men in the mill. And about, yeah, she said three. I'll say 75 women. It was fun. I had a really good time. And I And I'm in this small town, and my car was parked in front of the neighborhood bar. If I worked 7 to 3, it would be there at 3 p.m., or maybe I would go to the gym first and then go there to the bar. If I got off at 11 p.m., it was there. If I got off at 7 a.m., I'd be at that bar, and at 9 a.m., I could be out on the street, like, rapping to some dude, totally drunk, after what? You go in a bar for 2 hours, 12 gin and tonics, just firing them down. And, you know, our church is down the street. My mother's credit union's down the street. I don't care about how my actions affect anybody else. I don't care about how my behavior is. I don't even think about it. That's who I am. I don't even think about how my actions affect you. It never even occurs to me. I should park my car around the back. How do you get raised like that? I'm from a good family. You know, my mom and dad's family, a couple years ago, we went to Vegas for a class, or not a class reunion, but a reunion with the cousins. Cousins, everybody on both sides, my mom and dad have, there's 6 siblings. Everybody talks. Nobody doesn't talk. And that's the family I'm from. And, you know, I don't care about anybody but me. And I'm in Pittsburgh, you know, and in 1980, the Steelers were coming to the Super Bowl out here. And they were going to Pasadena, and so was I. And I talked these 2 girls in a bar into driving out here with me. And, you know, we did. I think we got here in 3 days or 2.5. They kept saying, "Can we stop?" I'm like, "Why?" I had all this, you know, speed. And I remember I had a case of Iron City beer, which you probably never heard of, and in the trunk, and Iron City, and... And we got here, and we went to that game that night. I got tickets, and we went to the game, and after that game, it was so crazy. It was just crazy. And I got pulled over from the police that night, but this is now 1980. It was a lot different then, and we were going to Marina Del Rey, where the Steelers and some fans of the Steelers were going to be, so I have these girls in my car, and we go over to Marina Del Rey, and we're partying, and then everybody says, "Hey, we're going to this other club." Well, see, the kind of friend I am, if you're not right on my heels when I say we're going, I'm leaving you. And that's what I did. And I remember driving away from that club following this other car and seeing those 2 girls from Pittsburgh like this. Like, and I just thought, they're just slowing me down. I'm not proud of that, but that's who I am. I don't care. I was staying at my girlfriend's house in Garden Grove, and I dropped them off at a hotel when we first got here, and I remember them coming the next day because I had their luggage in the trunk of my car. And they gave me that look, and all I could think is, why don't they just get out of here? And you know, those 2 girls reported to my father in that steel mill. My dad was their manager. I didn't think, holy smoke, I better get on the phone, or I better make this right, or I better do something, because how's my father going to feel? I never even thought about it. I don't care. I just don't even care. I'm not proud of that, but that's where my alcoholism takes me. And so I'm here, and, you know, and I'm collecting checks. I'm a check collector. You know, I'm collecting checks because I got laid off from U.S. Steel, and I got an apartment in Redondo Beach. And my parents, you know, California, Pittsburgh, honestly, all we knew was we used to watch drag racing on Saturday out in Pomona and Gidget. My parents came out here, and this is what because all I wanted to do, I got myself some roller skates. I just wanted to roller skate on that strand in Manhattan Beach and drink all the time. And my dad and mom came out here, and they're like, "What the hell you think you're going to do, Cindy, roller skate through life?" And my dad, he's about the job. You know, you need to get a job, and you can't stay here. They were mortified. They were actually mortified. And I stayed, and I got a job, and I'm living in this apartment, and now I'm at the point where I'm waking up in the middle of the night or in the morning, and I vomit all over me. And I'm thinking, who did this? and I'm alone. And all my friends were, I had a couple friends from Pittsburgh that lived in Redondo Beach, and everybody just drinks and parties like me. And I sort of thought everybody did this. And I got this job, you know, I could always get a job. And then I got another job, and I was working for an oil company in the City of Commerce, and I had a boyfriend at that job, and he was a nice guy. He really liked me. I was young. I was, 28 years old. But there's no telling how I'm going to behave. There's no telling how I'm going to behave once I start drinking. And if you tick me off at all, or if it seems like you're just, your world isn't revolving around me, I got to go. Screw you. Who needs you anyways? And I'll just leave you wherever we are. And I go home, and I pass out, and I come to, and I have that, did it happen or didn't it happen? And then I get that sick feeling. It happened. And what I do is I take a drink to solve the problems caused by my alcohol. And that happens with jobs, with girlfriends, with boyfriends, with anybody. That's what I do. And really, they're all problems of my own making. And mostly because of alcohol. And what happened is I was living in Redondo Beach, and I don't know if my rent went up or what happened, but I was driving down PCH one day, and I ended up in Belmont Shores, and I ended up in front of this bar called Legends. And I went in there, it was a Sunday, and I thought, I love this bar. I'm moving here. And I moved to Belmont Heights, to 10th and Loma. And we used to call it Club Loma. It was just all single people. It had a pool, and it was just drinking all the time. And I met this new guy. Oh, gosh. It was a match made in heaven or hell. But, you know, he used to drink this 151 rum. And I'll tell you, if you're not done, have some 151. Because that stuff will get you a seat here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love 151 rum. It's not messing around. That is some good stuff. He used to say to me, I've never met a girl that likes 151 as much as you. And I just, that stuff just lights you up. And I got a job at Douglas Aircraft. I'm working there at Douglas Aircraft. If my life depended on it, I couldn't tell you what I did there. But I had it was a good job. It was like this management training job at Douglas Aircraft. And I couldn't make it to work because now I'm horrible. I called one time and I told him I was electrocuted the night before. I don't know where I got up with it. I know where I got that excuse. I had a Brillo pad, and I was cleaning, and I was cleaning the electrical outlet, and don't do that. And I could have went to work, but it seemed like a good, but I was, you know, I couldn't show up Monday. I probably couldn't show up Tuesday. I mean, Friday, you can't go to work, when I did go, I'm the person that goes out for lunch and starts drinking and then calls and says I can't come back. And and I'm also the person that I'm drinking in the morning. And if there was nothing left from the night before, I'm the girl that, I don't know where we learned this. I didn't learn it at home. But liquor stores start selling alcohol at 6 a.m. And I'm the girl that puts on a raincoat and goes to the boys' market on the corner of Anaheim and Redondo in Long Beach. There was a boys' market there. I go in there and I buy a bottle. I have to tell the attendant there that it's somebody's birthday at work. And I go home and I mix up some drinks, no ice, no nothing. And I'm always sweating and getting ready for work. And so I'm drinking before work. And at lunchtime, sometimes I'm just, keep it simple. Half pint of vodka, gulp, 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 out the car window. And I get that sense of ease and comfort. And everything seems better after a half pint of vodka. One morning I went into work, it was August of 1985. I went into work and my boss, Douglas was big, lots of buildings. My boss came from another building and he said to me, "Cindy, we think you've been drinking, we want to take you to the infirmary." You guys, I don't know anything about alcoholism. I don't know anything about, I just felt like I was backed up against the wall. So what I did is, with all my brains, I took my badge and I left it on the guard's desk and I walked out. And I went home and it was, I don't know what time it is, let's say it was 9 o'clock in the morning. I went home and I had to drink to solve the problems caused by my alcoholism. And it was Friday in August and it was, you get your check on Friday. So I had to go back around lunchtime to get my check. I got my check and I was headed back to my apartment, and under the Long Beach Airport there's a tunnel, and I had a brand new RX-7. It was the cutest little car. I don't know if they make them anymore, but they used to have these hidden headlights, and mine was smacked up so much the one headlight was like winking all the time. It always got fixed because I can't drive a wrecked up car, but there was one light that just couldn't get it together. And so I was headed back to my apartment and I smacked my car up against the side of the tunnel, and the police came and they took me to jail. Now,
to obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Something I was never going to tell a soul. They handcuffed me to my belt. It was pathetic. And it was a tied belt, and I couldn't get out. But they took me to jail, and seriously, I thought I was fine. It was about 11 o'clock in the morning, and my alcohol content was 0.32. That's not the highest I've heard around here, but I think it qualifies me, especially because it was morning drinking. And I got out of jail, 1985, I got out of jail like 5 o'clock that afternoon. And I go home, and my boyfriend was playing softball down in Seal Beach. You know, I got to get out there among them. I can't miss anything. So I go to that game in the same clothes I've been to work in, I've been to jail in. Yeah. And I go to that game, and I'm drinking. And, you know, I'm a girl that I always knew when I was going to go down. I had so much time, and then I was going to pass out. And I wanted to be safe, and this is what I do. If we were here, say, and I thought I was going to pass out, or we were outside more likely, and I knew where your car was, what I do is if you don't leave the doors open, I lay on the hood. I call myself a hood layer. I lay on the hood, and I use the windshield kind of as for my back, and I pass out. And what came, you know, he came out of that game, and he's like, "That's it, we're done." Well, I've heard that before. Just take me home. So he takes me home, and the next morning I wake up and I had that. Did that happen or didn't it happen? And that was a bad day. That was a bad day. And I called my father in Pittsburgh and I said, "Dad, I think I have a problem with alcohol. I need help." Now, what I meant was, please send money. I told you about my dad. He's not a mess around guy. I've never heard my dad in his whole life ever say, "Let's think about it." He's not that guy. I scared the crap out of my father. He doesn't know about alcoholism. He had given me some guns to protect myself. That's how we deal with things. Get a gun. And I told him I was going to kill myself. Within minutes, the Long Beach police were walking through my apartment door. And I said, "What are you doing here?" Because I thought I didn't do anything, did I? And I said, "What are you doing here?" And they said, "Your father called us from Pittsburgh." My dad was worried. And next thing is, I have this big brother, right? I told you about him. He's a great guy. And he loves his little sister. And my brother had moved out to the San Fernando Valley, probably because his little sister was here. And he was recently married, and he and his wife, they're the people that get a house and kind of fix it up. And they were retiling their whole bathroom that day, Saturday. My brother works all week, bought all that crap. He has all that crap out to retile his bathroom. And the Long Beach police call my brother and say, "We're with your sister. She has a gun." And my brother had to, and we've talked about this. My brother goes, "A what?" And the police go, "A gun." My brother had to drop all that and drive to Long Beach on a Saturday morning. My new sister-in-law had to clean all that up and then come down. My brother looked at me. The police stayed. I don't know how this happened, but he looked at me and he said, "Go put some clothes on." He was so embarrassed. I'm not proud of that. You know, my father was here on Sunday. My parents were divorced then, but friendly. And because they're good people, they love their kids. And my father was here on Sunday. And he came, and through different circumstances, he got in touch with a friend of our family who was a well-known heart surgeon in Pittsburgh, and he was a friend of Clancy's, and he was in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he told my dad to take me to the Pacific Group on Wednesday night. Now, my dad's never been to AA. I've never been to AA. But he was calling the shots. And I went to AA with my dad that Wednesday night. It was hell those days with my dad. Because I need to drink alcohol. I would run over to that boys' market, say I was going to the store, hide bottles in the bushes around my apartment in Long Beach, just drinking vodka out of a bottle. Because I need alcohol. My dad took me to the Pacific Group, and we were told to meet Clancy out on the stairs, and we went there, and my dad and Clancy are having a conversation. I wish I had a picture of this, but I have a picture in my mind, and my dad, you know, I told you, let's solve this problem, and a lot of it has to do with a job, and he's going to Clancy, "Can she get the job back?" And you guys know Clancy, he's like, "I don't know," and my dad said, "Well, what can I do?" And Clancy said to my dad, "There's not a goddamn thing you could do. She's got to do it." And I thought, now that's rude. Here's a guy, came all the way from Pittsburgh, brought his daughter up to L.A. We waited in this big, long line to get into this meeting, and that's all he could say. And Clancy took us into the Pacific Group that night with my first meeting. And he walked us down front, and he set us, like, right over here. And he sat me next to this couple, and the gal was pregnant, and she was blonde, and she was pretty. And she was from Lakewood, and I think Clancy thought, well, you know, I lived in Long Beach, she lived in Lakewood. Maybe I would call her, whatever. And I remember when they asked for people in their first 7 days of sobriety, she raised my hand, and I'd been drinking that day. I smelled like alcohol, and they have a piano up here. My dad bought me a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous off the piano that night. I don't remember much about that meeting. I do remember one of the 10-minute speakers. She was a girl, and she said that she would drink in the morning and look in the mirror and think there's something wrong with this picture, and I didn't think, oh, yeah, I feel like that. No. But it registered with me. And I had to stay in Long Beach for about a week or two, and my dad stayed with me, and we walked through that stuff, and my dad packed up all my crap, and he drove me back to Pennsylvania, and my parents put me in a 28-day treatment program. And, you know, I thought while I was in there that I was getting Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I was getting it. They had it. They had the message, and I thought I had it. But you know what else I learned in there? I learned about drinking NyQuil and Listerine. And I got out, and I was probably sober a couple days, and I started drinking NyQuil. And I would drink Listerine, and I would drink anything that had alcohol in it. And I would drink alcohol when I could get it, but that's who I am. and a retired couple would pick me up every night and take me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got out of that treatment program, I think, in October. Every night, they would shake me. My mom wouldn't be home. I was living in the house with my mom, the house I grew up in. My mom is a nice lady, really. She's a fine, classy lady. And my mom looked so sad and gray. It was a sad time. I would go to a meeting, and I wanted to be sober. I did, but I couldn't put down that alcohol. I couldn't imagine life without alcohol. And my dad was over at the house one day, and I said, I'm going to commit suicide. And I'm going to commit suicide. And so my dad said to me, go ahead. I'm going golfing. And I thought, uh-oh, this is not going well. And shortly after that, on a Saturday night, I don't know what kind of meeting it was. I can't tell if it was a speaker meeting, participation meeting, what it was. But I went home that Saturday night, and I went up to my room that I grew up in, and I walked in that room, and I had that moment of grace. And I smelled this funky smell in the room. My mother is clean. My mother washes bananas. Yeah. She's clean, and this funky smell, and the funky smell was me, and it was like this funky, Listerine, not fresh breath, and I had that moment of grace where I thought, I don't want to die. I don't want to live like this anymore, and the next day was a Sunday, and it was November 2nd, 1986, and I went to 3 meetings that day. Now, I didn't tell anybody this was going to be my first day because I didn't know if I could do it. And I got that first day. And I remember the second day, I went to another meeting. They used to have this hot dog meeting on Mount Washington in Pittsburgh. I went to that meeting, and I wasn't telling anybody. They don't really ask for newcomers, or I don't remember. But I remember this guy at the meeting had 18 years, and I thought, if I could just get 18 days. And, you know, I just kept going to meetings, and I got this little job in Pittsburgh. It was around Christmas was coming, and I would spray cologne in the mall. I was one of those people that chased you down and sprayed you with alcohol. I mean, yeah, just about, right? And at Christmas, like right after Thanksgiving, for a couple weeks, I was dressed in a full-on reindeer outfit. Big head, my nose lit up. I had this little button in my paw that if I went like this, my nose lit up. And if you bought Polo cologne, you got your picture taken with me. It was an awesome job, $6 an hour. Loved that job. And I'm doing that, and I'm going to meetings all the time. I don't have a sponsor. This retired couple picked me up. After a couple weeks, I remember saying to the man, he was in AA, she went to meetings, his wife went just for the donuts. But I think she was nice. And they never said to me, you smell like alcohol. Never once. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the love we have in this room. For a newcomer, we don't judge you. You just keep coming back because we don't judge you. We want you to be sober. We want you to have a good life like us. And after a couple weeks, I said to this man, I said, hey, Chip, I have like 2 weeks of sobriety. He said, I'm so glad. I'm so happy for you. He never said, we knew you were drinking the whole time. Never. Never made me feel bad. And after about 6 months, that boyfriend got in touch with me, and he said, why don't you come back to California? I went to my dad, I went to my mom, and I said, I want to go back to California. And my father said to me, Cindy, if you're going to drink, you're going to drink anywhere. And I my brother was here. And so I came back to California. I came, and this is who I am. It's 6 months of sobriety. I left on Mother's Day. Yeah, pathetic. But, you know, self-centered, self-seeking, that's me. I probably went to church with my mom, couldn't even go to brunch. I remember my parents driving me to the airport. They were worried. And I came on Mother's Day, which is a Sunday, and on Monday night, I was living in Hawaiian Gardens on Monday night. I looked at that directory, and I went to the Monday night Seal Beach Speakers meeting. And they said, you know, is there anyone from out of town? I raised my hand, and I said, my name's Cindy. I just moved here from Pittsburgh. And it break, this girl turned around and she said, hi, my name's Cheryl, welcome to our meeting. And I said, you know, you look familiar. Where do you go to meetings? And she said, I go to the Pacific Group. and I needed a sponsor. I didn't know anything about that specific group, even though I've gone like three times, but I didn't know anything about it. I would have never asked her to be my sponsor. I mean, seriously, I would ask someone who's cool, who was outside smoking during the 12 traditions, but I said to her, how long are you sober? She was sober 12 years, and she looked really pretty, and she looked nice. Everyone liked her, and I asked her to be my sponsor. She's still my sponsor. It's been 28 and a half years, or 28 years, well, on Mother's Day, or the day after Mother's Day, I sent her a little, you know, I called her and said, thank you for the 28 years of sponsorship. And she wasn't nice, though. No. My mother says Cheryl's the best thing that's ever happened to me. Cheryl taught me to be a good example of this program. She taught me things like, return cards here. That means me. And I said to her, what does that have to do with being sober? And she told me, Cindy, we're people that don't follow the rules. And if you start following the rules, your life will get better. And I found that to be true. If they tell me to be at work at 8 o'clock, I'm at work at 8 o'clock. If I'm supposed to pay taxes, we pay taxes. Whatever. If they say don't park here, I don't park there. Then I don't get a ticket. My life has gotten better. Cheryl's taught me that God wants good things for me. You know, I lived in with this boyfriend, and I was new, and I was 32, and you know, I wanted to get married, and he drank, and we got married, and I got married in that church I grew up in. I was a sober bride. We had a very nice wedding, and I was going to meetings, and. Oh, and then we moved down to Mission Viejo, we bought a house, and I want to tell you, those financial amends, they come and get you when you want to buy a house, and I forgot all about that. That RX-7 I wrecked, I've never seen that car since that day. Well, guess what? They don't forget. We went to buy a house, and I had this big list of bad credit, and I remember taking a big check up to L.A. and paying all that stuff. I had to pay all that stuff off. I didn't claim bankruptcy. I made amends for the money that I spent. And you know, we got married and we moved to Mission Viejo. We bought a house and I got another job. And everybody at work has those master's degrees. Well, you know, I'm one of those people. You know, you got one, I want one. So I had to go back to school and I applied for school to get an MBA, and like they were like, are you kidding me? You? And they call your college and get records. Well, I had the president of the company and everyone write letters, and I got into Pepperdine on probation, and in 1999, I graduated with a 3.76 grade point average. And, yeah. I'm not smart, but I'll tell you what I learned. I learned how to suit up, show up, do my commitments on time, be part of a group, and kiss up. I was I was no longer that pain in the rear end student. I was the one that was like, I'd call those professors on Sunday. I love this stuff. It is so interesting. And sometimes I would read a whole chapter in a book. This is true. I'd sit there for so long. I'm not the brightest bulb. Anyways, I'd read a whole chapter. I'd get to the summary, and I'd think, did I read that chapter? What was it about? Because all I'm thinking about is what I'm going to wear to work tomorrow. So anyway, this guy turned up being an alcoholic, and had come to AA, and he was a good guy. Good, good guy. Everyone liked him. But it come to AA, and it drink, and it come to AA, and one time I called Cheryl. I remember I was actually working in Hawaii. I called Cheryl, and I said, Rod's drinking again, and she said, you guys need a break. And there was no arguing. All the arguing, the bribing, all that was done, and I just said, we need a break, and we split up, and she told me to do that with dignity and grace. I don't know about you. Sometimes you're talking to your sponsor, or I'm talking to my sponsor on the phone. especially when I'm going through a lot, it's like it's all you could take, you know, and you go, okay, and then you hang up and you go, what does that mean? So I would go to this old timer in my Wednesday night meeting. Her name was Pat Hartsfield. Many of you know her. And she would come to this convention and the powwow, and I love Pat. And she was a program of attraction for me because she'd wear St. John every Wednesday night. Remember Pat? I loved her. And I went to her and I said, what does that mean? And she said, to do it without a lot of drama, Cindy, and you're not to drag his name through the mud in AA. And I believe I did that. I told a few of my close friends and my family. My family and friends carried me through that. It was not a good time. I know my sponsor had close eyes on me during that time, and I adore my sponsor. I adore her, and I know I'm the person I am because of Cheryl. So if you don't like me, talk to her. So anyways, we got a divorce, and I would go to my Wednesday night meeting. There was a group of us that went out to coffee, and I had a buddy, and my buddy Mike, and we would hang out and go to meetings, and then I started liking him. But you know, what I learned here is I could tell people, and I could ask about it. So I told my sponsor, I told all my friends, I told all the girls at the gym, and one night we came home from a meeting, and I said, he was dropping me off. I said, you want to come in for a minute? Which was unusual. He said, okay. And he comes in, and I said, I think I sat down on the couch, and then he stood up, and I stood up, and he sat down. It was weird, and we're like 48 years old, and I go, you know, Mike, I'm starting to have feelings for you, but I don't want it to ruin our friendship. And he said, I like you too. And I gave him a little kiss, and I said, oh, okay, I'll see you tomorrow. And he went home, and we started dating, and we got married. We've been married 10 years now. We have a good life. And you know, it was different. Mike was a cyclist, and he, after I think 6 months or so, he was going to the Tour de France to watch those cyclists, and he said, why don't you meet me in Paris at the end? And this is how different Alcoholics Anonymous was for me. I was divorced, and I had a niece and nephew at the time. They were in their like 6 and 3, and one of the first, I called Cheryl first, and Cheryl said go, and then I called my mom. And I said, Mom, would you be embarrassed? Because she knew Mike. I said, Mom, would you be embarrassed if I went to Paris with Mike? And she thought about it. And then she said, no, you go and have a good time. And I called my sister-in-law, and I said, would that be okay with Kevin and Krista? She said, go, have a good time. But that was my thinking. That's what you did to my thinking here. I just think about other people. And, you know, Mike and I, we were born on the same day, same year, if you could believe it, March 12th, 1954. And we got married on our birthday 10 years ago. We had birthday candles on our birthday cake, and it was a really nice event. And we got married in Long Beach, and so our friends from our Wednesday night meeting were there, and our sponsors and our family. And so what do I want to tell you? I want to tell you a little bit about my family. So my father lived in Phoenix for many years. This is the kind of guy my dad is. My dad moved to Phoenix, I think it's 75, never even saw the house. My brother went over there, found him a house. My dad sent him the money. He bought a house. He loaded up a U-Haul and drove to Phoenix, and he lived over there. My mom was in Pittsburgh, and I want you to know, every Mother's Day, every mother's birthday, I was with my mom. And my parents would come visit me in California, and I would go visit my dad. And I was, when I was 20 years sober, we were having a party, and my mom had to have open heart surgery, and my brother and I were there with my mom. And the kind of daughter that you taught me to be, I showed up at that hospital, and I was dressed nice. And I talked to those doctors respectable. And my sponsor, I remember her saying these, what she taught me is, Cindy, that's your mom. It's about your mom. It's about not about your mom. You know what I mean? And I was there for my mom. And my mother got well. And then, you know, when I was 25 years sober, my father got sick. And we were having a party on Saturday, and Thursday, my father was going to fly over to Orange County, and I want you to know I bought that ticket. Not that he couldn't afford it, but that's what you taught me to do. When I invite my father, I buy the ticket. He was coming to my party. He was going to golf with my husband on Saturday, and that Sunday I got a call that he called me to tell me he was short of breath. I'm like, Dad, call 911. And he went into the hospital, and he was 88, I think, and he had to have a quadruple bypass, and he had it that week. My brother and I were there, and he did well, but then he didn't. His heart wasn't pumping enough and hard enough, and his kidneys went into failure. He was on dialysis, and this went on for 4 weeks. Every Friday night, I was on a plane going to Phoenix. I had a bear of a job. I would go over there. I'd be with my dad and close contact with my sponsor during that time and my friends. And not that I don't want you to think that during those 25 years, I haven't made amends to my parents. And I didn't thank them for everything they did for me. But during those 4 weeks, I had that time to sit with my dad and tell him again how proud I am that he's my father and to thank him for what he gave me. And then we decided, the three of us, my brother, my dad, and I decided that, are we prolonging life or are we prolonging death? It was no way for my dad to be there at the end, so we stopped that dialysis. And it was about 4 days, and I got to sit with my dad and read that 23rd Psalm. And my sponsor said, ask him if he wants to go home. And I did that, and he did it, and I stayed with him. And my father passed away, and my brother and I were there. And, we had also made a decision during that time to bring my mom to California to be in assisted living. So Mike and I flew over to Pennsylvania, got my mom to assisted living, which had all worked out good because my mom kind of had to just suck it up and be okay there, and she did. We had this great apartment set up for her, and my father passed away, and we got his ashes, and I was waiting for my flight, and my brother called me. My brother lives in San Diego, and my brother called, and he asked how I was doing, and I was waiting for my flight from Phoenix to go to Pennsylvania with those ashes, and he said, how are you? And I said, I'm good. And he said, Cindy, I want you to know you were so good with our father. And I'm so thankful. I'm so grateful you're my sister, and I love you very much. You know, how do you get from there to here? Alcoholics Anonymous, a simple program, 12 steps. It's so simple. I could have missed it all. And, my mom's in San Diego now. This is the kind of husband I have. My husband, even when my mom was in Pittsburgh, my husband calls my mother every Friday. When she was in Pittsburgh, she used to answer the phone like this. Hi, my son-in-law. Yeah, she adores him. We go down to see her about every other weekend. My husband goes. He drives me down. We take our sheepdog. We have an old English sheepdog. My mother, I want you to know, is the best-dressed lady in that assisted living. She has more clothes, jewelry, and I buy it all. I'm so happy when we go there. I have bags of all the stuff she likes and her favorite gum and all that stuff. And when she turned 90 in September, last September, we had a nice party for her. Dean came and did magic. People were so happy. Oh, we had so much fun with these 90-year-olds. You couldn't even imagine. Dean said to this one, I think she was actually 99. He said to this one adorable woman, pick a number from 1 to 9. And she went like this, oh my God. We had a blast. And then I have this older brother. My brother's fabulous. My brother is one of those guys that drinks till he gets right there. Are you kidding me? He's handsome, he's funny. Very successful. I have a fabulous niece and nephew. I love them. They adore their Aunt Cindy. My niece came up last weekend just to hang out with us. And, sometimes when I have a birthday party for one of the girls that I sponsor, my niece will come and help me because it's easy to boss her around because she's my niece. But one day I was like doing all these things and she goes, Aunt Cindy, stop. What are you doing? And I looked at her and I said, Krista, what if you had to live in this body, in this head all the time? This is what she said to me, without a beat. She said, a drink. Yeah. So, that's another thing I want to say. I get to sponsor alcoholic women in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have some good ones. These girls, They are amazing. I've sponsored one, I think, 5 years. She just celebrated a year. I adore her. I love these girls I sponsor. And one more thing I want to say about my brother. I mentioned he's successful. My brother lives on the street where the Rams and the Padres live. At Halloween, those kids come and trick-or-treat in golf carts. Seriously. So Alan had to buy a golf cart, yeah. And but he loves me. And I love him. And it's been a year now, but he has an 8,000 square foot house in San Diego, one story. It's fabulous. It's like a resort. And you know, sometimes I could get a little bit, hey, you know, my theme song is, "What about me? Where's mine? What about me? Where's mine?" And I was driving to my Wednesday night meeting, and I had that moonroof open, I'm listening to Adele, you know, I'm singing, I think I'm Adele, and I'm thinking, you know, hey, you know, what about me? Like, it's kind of stressful, all that, and he has all that, and the next thing I thought, I think I just got off the phone with one of the girls I sponsor, she had this catastrophe, and we solved it, it was a triumph, and then I thought, what about me? You know, I get to be here with you. I have all this. I have a God in my life. I'm an alcoholic. I'm way overpaid in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.